and welcome to the Postcard from Gibraltar podcast. This week, all the schools in Gibraltar are closed, so you're joining me in the park where I'm trying to wear out my children. It's the Easter holidays and we're now in Holy Week, and the Jewish community has celebrated Passover this week too. Religion plays a significant role in life here in Gibraltar. Religious festivals are marked with more vigour here than back in the more secular UK. Major religions represented on the Rock are Roman Catholic Christianity being the largest, but other Christian denominations are here too, including Anglican, Methodist, Church of Scotland, Baptist and Evangelical. Judaism and Islam are also strongly represented, along with Hinduism and other faiths. There are 19 churches listed in the Gibraltar phone book, along with 3 synagogues, 2 mosques and a Hindu temple. In fact, I'm at Europa Point at the moment, and from where I'm standing I can see a Roman Catholic shrine and Gibraltar's largest mosque a short distance away. If I were in the town centre of Gibraltar, say on Linewall Road, I'd be within a minute's walk from a mosque, Gibraltar's Anglican and Catholic cathedrals, and its largest synagogue. Here in Gibraltar, despite its small size and the very close proximity of neighbours, there's an overwhelming sense of religious tolerance, something which is quite remarkable, considering that when the Treaty of Utrecht was signed over 300 years ago, ceding Gibraltar to Britain, one of the conditions was that no Moors or Jews were allowed to live here. A think tank has been set up to explore why Gibraltar's different religious communities are so successful at living together. It hopes to increase communications between the different groups and one day to export the model we have here to other communities elsewhere in the world. I recently spoke to Joshua Lott from the think tank Understanding Gibraltar to find out more.
In a nutshell, it's a think tank that looks at Gibraltar as a potential universal model of social and cultural tolerance, or harmony, depending on how you want to put it. I think tolerance is still a very good word. If the world would be tolerant, it would be a better world. So I can say tolerance is, for now, the objective. Harmony will be the ultimate success. But yes, since Gibraltar has in 300 years, especially in total paradox to the Constitution of Gibraltar from the Treaty of Utrecht, which in its Article 10 and provisions provides for Gibraltar to be free of Jews and Moors from ever living here, which maybe not many people know even Article 10, but even less that it actually still applies today. Gibraltar has in fact succeeded, despite of that constitution, into creating a social project for its civilian as well as the military, but in general a project which was very inclusive to all its members, and to date having a completely unique multicultural society, which as far as I'm concerned, because I've lived in different places in the world and I've traveled, is unusual and pretty much unheard of, and it is worth studying, especially in our days where populism and the suspicion on one's neighbor seems to be again a feature of the real politics and the social reality in Europe and in the Western world in general, as we can see in the United States. And it is, I think, probably time to look for an affirmative model like the one of Gibraltar, which has succeeded in naturally creating this harmony, and by studying it, hopefully being able to maintain it in Gibraltar and maybe improve it, and then export it, share it with other nations outside, because the reason why we believe it's universal is because it's a human experience, and the human experience relates all of humanity of all time and all places. And if it works in Gibraltar at this time and this place, we believe it can be exported and work anywhere else.
What do you think is the key that makes society in Gibraltar work?
I think there's a number of features that are entwined with one another. So it's not possible to actually pinpoint one or two or three. Maybe there's 15 different things at once. But definitely there are some obvious features which, if you take, for example, as was just mentioned, Article 10, how that was Article 10 transcended very quickly, because we know the Treaty of Utrecht was ratified in 1713, and there's a Jewish presence in on the Rock pretty much since 1715, and the first synagogue was here in the 1720s. So, which, by the way, created one of the oldest standing Jewish communities in Europe, again in old paradox from the outset of Gibraltar's constitution. If you take that example, for example, the Jewish community, it's pretty much the relationship with Spain that are determined, and I'm saying by relationship I mean the antagonizing relationship with Spain, which has determined the Jewish presence here. In the sense that originally, when Utrecht was ratified, Spain and Britain agreed on Gibraltar's British sovereignty. But very quickly, by 1715, in fact, Spain decided to violate the provisions of the treaty and siege Gibraltar to take it again into the Spanish realm. So as soon as that happened, the situation completely shifted into England being or Britain being in need of supply for the British garrison in this part of the world, and they turned to the very people that were forbidden from coming, the Moors and the Jews, because the Sultan of Morocco at the time was called the Mullah Ismail, had accepted to supply the garrison, and through a minister of finance who was Jewish, Moses Ben Attar, brought Jewish merchants from the cities of Tetouan and Tangier and the north of Morocco, just opposite Gibraltar, and these people became so paramount to the survival of the British garrison in Gibraltar that they became natural residents, despite of their legal incapacity to reside. Eventually, they had to overlook that capacity, and I think this is a fundamental message which has universal value in itself. It's mean that once life and death are at stake, and there's a realization that the neighbor, the other one, that in some time of complacency can be marginalized, but in time of stress will be included. Eventually, no matter how the prejudice stands, when reality strikes and one needs to feed itself, as was the British garrison at the time, prejudice does not take precedence. It's the opposite. It's, in a sense, humanity becomes more alive in times of absolute stress. And I think this is one of the fundamental features of Gibraltar being under siege for so many years, so many, I mean, in 300 years it was quite a large number of siege. I couldn't count them all, but we heard all of the great siege with Elliot and all the different times where Spain has tried to take over Gibraltar by force, and that insular part of Gibraltar not being able to go to have any other land frontiers than the Spanish one, has forced them to accept a reality which wasn't the one that they had looked at the beginning in the case of Utrecht.
I guess in recent history we've had the closure of the frontier under Franco,
and then, yeah, absolutely.
And in those times that Gibraltar had to look to Morocco for help, for supplies, for food and everything again.
Yeah, I mean, there's more and less extreme times where Franco obviously was an extreme case. It was a World War II, and it was, the times of the Spanish Civil War. You had, and then earlier in time, you had the Great Siege and the First Siege, and then all the different times. And even recently, if you take the crisis that happened, you know, with the reefs, then suddenly the frontier became again more opaque, more difficult. Obviously not as dramatic as a Franco time or before, but the point is that there is always that menace, that, you know,
there's
that
a tension there.
There's
isn't
a
there?
Tension that take into some kind of hostage. The people of Gibraltar have the capacity to look at themselves as potentially trapped into a situation which escapes them, and I think this has contributed in people appreciating more what they have and appreciating the level of help they can get from outside of Gibraltar, which can counter in a way the oppression that they feel that Spain is enduring over them.
So what are you going to do with this information? When you've spoken to people and you've kind of digested all the information you get about how the community works together with the different faith groups and with the different nationalities, what are you going to do with it?
Well, first of all, the database will be stored. We'll be able to, we'll publicize it, so it won't be just for our research. It would be for all different think tanks or different any sort of constitutional body, anybody that is looking for that kind of social model to be able to get. So it's really the point is to publicize it and obviously improve it over time, because as I said, there's one solution, there's one reason which I mentioned now, but this Gibraltar has very different features which have contributed together. So refining it over time and at a moment where we will feel that it's as close as possible to a exportable solution, then really go outside and share it with other nations and other governments or other think tanks or whoever is looking for such models. I will just take an example of this French philosopher. It's called Alain Badiou. I don't know. He's quite known actually in England, but I don't know if the mainstream the people would know about it. But he's very well known in France, and he, you know, he's a nostalgic of the communist era. But he does realize that it was a failure, in the sense that communism has in fact triggered more tragedy than equality. But he's always saying that we have to try and imagine an affirmative model that on which we can look upon and create some kind of social, egalitarian, and more fair society. So the idea, I think, for people like Badiou or other philosophers of that level, is to really show them that there is an affirmative model in Gibraltar, and you know, we'll try and as much as we can to expand, democratize that concept to other nations who don't know about Gibraltar, certainly don't know what's happening in Gibraltar, if they even know where it is in the world, and create awareness. I mean, that's all we can do at the end of the day. You know, if people are honest about their research for a better world, then somehow, on the long run, hopefully as fast as possible, you'll have other people joining us and looking into it with us, you know.
And has your research actually begun?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We started about 3 years ago. We have a number of propositions. What I mentioned, the siege culture. I can give you a number of propositions that came about. As for example, the status of privilege. You know, Gibraltar is privileged, but you know, Western Europe is privileged, but sometimes we don't realize we're privileged. But Gibraltar is if you take it on the map, you have Gibraltar and then you have La Linea on the other side, which is one of the poorest regions in Spain, in Europe for that matter. And you have Morocco, which is developing, but yet has still a lot of poverty. And Gibraltar has always sustained a high standard of living. So people in Gibraltar are visibly privileged, and that fact makes, you know, creates certainly more social harmony, in the sense that when you feel that you belong to a privileged society, you do appreciate it better. And for example, how would you export that idea? I mean, it's explaining to the people in the Western world how privileged they are compared to other people. Because once you understand what makes people like Gibraltar, they can, and you can understand where that privilege has come from. Ultimately, it's the British influence that gave Gibraltar that privilege. So people in Britain or in France or in these Western countries would really gain into understanding how privileged they are in order to have a more harmonious society. So this is, we have the privileged side, the fact that, you know, Gibraltar has a welfare state which functions quite well if you compare it to the kind of society like in the Anglo-Saxon world, let's say, we can take United States or England. The welfare state is much less present than it is in Gibraltar for historical reasons, but mainly the capitalistic approach, which is very much based on the individual capacity to provide for himself, takes more account of the companies or the sole traders, all these people that can provide for themselves, but the collectivist side is much less present. And with Gibraltar, you've got both. So there is already an advancement in the kind of socio-economical features of Gibraltar, which also create harmony, certainly, because people, you know, feel that the state does provide a lot, and at the same time, they can have an individual a welfare that is combined. So this is you see, Gibraltar has both the collectivist and the capitalist, which is not a contradiction. Gibraltar shows that that's also an example we can export. But what I mean is that the fact that it lives along in Gibraltar is certainly a source of communion, of a better understanding with each other. Yeah.
And do you think that people on the outside will look at Gibraltar and be able to adapt it to their situation? Because, as you've said, we are completely unique geographically, culturally, religiously, and on so many different planes.
Yeah.
Can it be exported to somewhere else?
Well, I think it is, because ultimately, no matter how many variations, whether religious, cultural, even the concepts of life are so different, but ultimately they're all features of the human experience. This is why, in a sense, Gibraltar has shown that being of a different background, a different religion, a different even culture or nationality, is not a fundamental barrier. I think society can make it a barrier, especially, for example, we see now all these rising populism, which reminds us of the 1930s, where suddenly a majority in a nation marginalized all the minorities. Obviously, it's a call usually, I think for me it relates to the weakness of man. I mean, that you kind of give a carte blanche, like a free pass, to people for hating other people, especially if they are vulnerable and they can't help themselves. But behind usually the rhetoric is about how incompatible these minorities are to the majority. I think we see by Gibraltar's experience that when people feel that they all belong to the same society, and there is no sense of majority or minority, there's no political majority or political minority, there is one nation with one project which includes all the individuals that compose it, then there is a human nation, a nation that has a project that transcends the different backgrounds.
That's Joshua Lott there from Understanding Gibraltar. If you'd like to find out more about the organisation, just look out for the Understanding Gibraltar page on Facebook. Thanks to Joshua for taking the time to speak to me. You're listening to the Postcard from Gibraltar podcast.
You're listening to the Postcard from Gibraltar podcast.
You're listening to the Postcard from Gibraltar podcast.
And thank you to you for listening to this episode of the Postcard from Gibraltar podcast. If you don't want to miss the next episode, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I would love it if you'd hit the subscribe button and even leave a review. That way more people will be able to find me. You can also listen and subscribe on the Podomatic app for Android and iOS devices. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, goodbye for now.